The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, the July and August edition. On the cover of this edition is the legendary Iman supermodel. We have not yet gotten to her story, but we're going to get there soon. So first thing first, under scene, television, speak on it. Back on screen in Grown-ish, Yara Shahidi is just fine with knowing her Hollywood power comes with great responsibility. Yara refuses to let her generation be underestimated. As the only Black actress under 21 starring in a TV show, Freeform's Grown-ish, which begins filming season 3 this summer. She uses her platform as one of Hollywood's in-demand actresses for the greater good. Whether she's speaking passionately about representation, James Baldwin, or podcasts, one topic is always on her 19-year-old mind, pushing her peers to becoming politically engaged. Thanks to her 18x18 campaign, Yara is helping to register young people to vote in the 2020 presidential election, as well as encouraging voters to become educated about politicians' policies. She's already hoping our next president will take an inclusive approach to tackling today's most important challenges. But the issue that's top of mind for her is a thought leader. I'd have to say a restructuring of our education system would be a priority in multiple aspects. She says, I fervently believe that people should have access to higher education if they choose the path without financial restraint. As a young woman coming of age in the Me Too era, which is bringing justice to women who've had to endure sexual misconduct and silence, Shahidi is grateful for the collision of time and space that determined where I was placed in the world, because I definitely do gain the privileges of the freedom that people before me have advocated for, she says. It's continuously inspiring because I don't think I moved into this world thinking it was a perfect place. Head of the class, like Yara, these talents were leading their own series before they turned 21. When Yara first came into our homes, thanks to Blackish, she was only 14 years old. The 19-year-old took her beloved character Zoe to a spinoff, Grown-ish, where she's navigating college with that same dusting of Black girl magic that made us fall in love with her in the first place. Kiki Palmer. 15-year-old Kiki Palmer starred in Nickelodeon's True Jackson VP as a young fashion mogul calling the shots from 2008 to 2011. The now 25-year-old actress and social media mainstay is currently set to appear in Hustlers, a highly anticipated film led by Jennifer Lopez due out in September. Raven Simone. We've known Raven Simone since she began keeping the Huxtable family in line on The Cosby Show. When she was a teen in 2002, the actress appeared in That's So Raven, in which her fictional character harnessed psychic powers that allowed her to see into her friend's future. She's now starring in the spinoff Raven's Home. Kyla Pratt. At a mere 15 years old, Kyla Pratt starred opposite Flex Alexander as Brianna Barnes, the daughter of a sportscaster who's forced to become a full-time dad and one-on-one. And now a mother of two, Pratt can be seen in the BET Star cinema film Back to the Good Life, available on streaming media. Zendaya. Many young people were inspired to embrace technology in 2015 when 18-year-old Zendaya starred as tech wizard and spy Casey Cooper in Casey Undercover. Now the actress is juggling projects we're excited about, including HBO's Euphoria, released in June, and Spider-Man Far From Home in theaters now. Tia and Tamara Mowry, playing twins separated at birth, real-life siblings Tia and Tamara Mowry, were complete hashtag sister goals on Sister Sister, which ran from 1994 to 1999, starting when they were just 15. Now Tia stars in Netflix's series Family Reunion, while her sister appears on the Emmy Award-winning talk show The Real. You can't dismiss the power of seeing a young black woman on TV, whether she's the clue that holds her family together or the glue that holds her family together, or using her supernatural powers to help friends see into the future. 16-year-old black girls who were considered stars by the networks were virtually non-existent, says Moesha, co-creator Ralph Thacker of the period when he conceptualized the now iconic series. After TV executives met with Fearless lead Brandi Norwood, who was already 16 and blowing everyone away on the music charts, it was a no-brainer, he recalls. Actresses who have followed in Norwood's footsteps all share an understanding. It's no easy feat carrying a show when you're still leaning or learning the depths of your talent. Still, these actresses influence young black women to be exactly who they are when the cameras aren't rolling. As each actress's star continues to rise, there's much to be said about the impact they made at such an early age. It's no wonder they're all still killing it on platforms big and small. And continuing on with scene from television, a name we can't forget. Speaking of Moesha, the iconic black sitcom starring Essence Fest performer Brandi Norwood, as a know-it-all teen thriving after the loss of her mother, still has fans talking decades later. It's no wonder we still want to be down. Brandi Norwood was hard at work on her sophomore album, Never Say Never, when her mother and then manager Sonia dropped by the recording studio in 1996. Instead of checking on the music, the elder Norwood had a pitch of a different kind. She gave me a script that Ralph Farquhar and the other creators of Moesha gave to her, Norwood recalls, and I was like, Mom, I'm not an actress. The singer, then 16, was no stranger to acting. But having starred in one season on the short-lived series Thea, Norwood admits, I didn't really take my acting seriously. The Mississippi-born, California-raised artist says she agreed to take the leading role in Moesha because she connected with the character, family dynamic, and storyline. The UPN series created by Farquhar, Sarah V. Finney and Vita Spears in 1994 was set in South Los Angeles. Felicia Henderson suggested we go after Brandi, who had just scored with her multi-platinum debut album. And in addition, she was on the cover of 17, remembers Farquhar. For six seasons, starting in the late 90s, young black girls watched in awe as Moesha lived a carefree life, dancing in Leimert Park in front of its iconic fountain, reflecting on her crazy high school days and nights in her journal and keeping her family in check. Back in Norwood's real life, she was trying to be a normal teen, even taking then NBA hopeful Kobe Bryant to her senior prom. But carrying an entire show on her back wasn't easy as laying down vocals in the booth. Norwood, now 40, and a mainstay on the small screen, admits she was sucked in the beginning, adding that she wasn't alone in her harsh assessment. Everybody thought I sucked. She credits living single actress Kim Fields with teaching her how to act. She snapped me into major discipline. Norwood says, noting that Fields would often meet her on tour to pour over her scripts. Without her, I wouldn't have nailed it. Cheryl Lee Ralph, who played Moesha's stepmother, Dee, says it was revolutionary to have a young woman who looks like Norwood in the lead role, especially one who's rocking braids. When I first saw her in all braided glory, I felt as if everything I had gone through as a black female entertainer had been worth it, Ralph says. But the single wearing the protective style didn't begin as a statement of progress. It was one of necessity, and Norwood wasn't afraid to tell her truth, even with the whole world watching. She recalls having worked in a hair salon before she began singing, took off, and a stylist suggested she perm her tresses. A lot of my hair came out, she shares. That's why I started wearing braids, and it was one of the best choices I made. It just speaks to who I really am. The singer says it's great hearing how much Moesha impacted a generation, whether it's from a random encounter with actress Kiki Palmer, or during interviews like this one, or when her 17-year-old daughter, Saray Iman Smith, started watching the entire series in her room, unbeknownst to her. Norwood says she couldn't have predicted how living authentically on screen would have affected black women around the world. So many women tell me, I never saw myself on television before Moesha, she says. Moesha made brown-skinned people feel like they could do anything. Continuing on with scenes, we're going to go to music. 25 years of black music. These iconic R&B and hip-hop albums have been the soundtrack to our culture. Mary J. Blige, My Life. It debuted in November of 1994. Black women everywhere rejoiced when Mary J. Blige closed out 1994 with the release of her sophomore project. Its standout was her emotional remake of Rolls Royce's timeless I'm Going Down. To this day, the anthem can ensure a sing-along with just about any crowd. TLC, Crazy Sexy Cool. That came out in November of 1994. Left Eye, Chili, and T-Boz brought the sultry, the sass, and of course the sexy with their sophomore offering. It boasted themes of social consciousness, waterfalls, sexual freedom, red light special, and empowerment that carved out a new lane for us in popular music. Outkast, Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music. I hope I just said that correctly, but that's actually the name of the album. And that came out in April of 1994. The South had something to say in the spring of 1994, and Outkast said it all with its impressive debut. Nas, Illmatic. April of 1994 was when that album debuted. Nas's first effort shook up the hip-hop world and solidified him as a lyrical force in the genre. His wordplay and unapologetically pro-black rhymes called out some of the most troubling social inequalities plaguing black communities. Da Brat. Her album was called Funk Defied, and that came out in June of 1994. Da Brat's tomboy style on and off the mic ushered in something new to ladies in hip-hop. And then, of course, On Repeat. Some of the classic songs that made these LPs unforgettable was Juicy by the late Notorious B.I.G. and his Ready to Die album. I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men. Before I Let You Go by Blackstreet. And Let's Not Forget I Used to Love Her by Common. And that album was from Resurrection. Continuing on with the scenes section, the arts. Painting the town black. We're going to meet the visionary breathing life into the corners of New Orleans. Brandon B. Mike Adams sees beauty in neglected spaces. If you've ever visited his New Orleans town, you may have walked past his work, his mural of French soccer star Paul Pogba near the Lafitte Greenway, for example. Or maybe you were curious about the civil rights icons painted on the walls of an abandoned housing project. A part of his 2013 series, Project B, in the city's Lower Ninth Ward, the area that was hardest hit by Hurricane Katrina back in 2005. As an artist, all I'm trying to do is simplify what's already there by collaborating with the people who are already there, says Autumns, who keeps his community, his city, and his message at the heart of everything he creates. I think that's the difference between coming into a space as a developer and saying, okay, I want to change this space in order to make it beautiful. For me, I'm coming in like an interpreter, how I basically say what people are already saying, but using art to do it. The 32-year-old has looked to the history and mythology of New Orleans to turn some of its ignored and forgotten corners into areas where art can flourish. What initially started out as an illegal venture has now become a legitimate career with his I Am Untitled paintings, featuring Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Oscar Grant, and Eric Garner, and his T's emblazoned with the phrase, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams. In 2016, a groundswell of support helped him launch his massive creative space, Studio B. And as much as Odom's work is for the community, he has had to make peace with the way his designs can transform a neighborhood. When I started doing this, I didn't define myself as a visual artist or a graffiti artist or a street artist. It was just something I was doing, says Odoms, who studied at the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts. But I had to come to terms with the fact that every spectrum of public art, whether it's the legal side of graffiti or the legal side of murals and street art, has a proximity to gentrification. The way Odoms addresses this complicated reality is to be as truthful as possible at all times, he says. I think regardless of who I'm working with or why I'm working, no one can buy my voice. That idea of being truthful is my way of speaking on behalf of those who don't have a voice. And that makes it very difficult to see the work as just a pretty image. So next time you're in NOLA, stop by Project B and take in Odom's truth. You too will be transformed. On to our next article titled The Change Makers. So Essence gathered Harlem's Fashion Row founder Brandice Daniel, Gucci collaborator Dapper Dan, and style maven Bevy Smith to discuss the fashion industry and how our up-and-coming designers can navigate it. Plus, Essence highlights a new generation of visionaries. Black designers aren't just having a moment. It's more like they've started a fashion movement. How else would you describe the history-making Fenty Mason launch by Rihanna, the first woman to start a new brand with luxury house LVMH, or the Pierre Moss founder's soul-stirring mission to challenge social narratives through his work. Today, Essence creatives are getting their own collections seen, and more important, sold. And the industry finally seems to be opening more doors. Despite these victories, however, the struggle is still real for Black-owned brands. Limiting funding, lack of exposure, and distribution roadblocks make it tough to stay afloat. Harlem's Fashion Row founder and CEO Brandice Daniel has decided to change that, connecting burgeoning brands and fashion insiders. For more than 10 years, she spearheaded the second drop of Nike's Black female-designed HFR times LeBron 16 shoe in May. Other Black influencers are also provoking change. Television and radio host Bevy Smith initiated her own campaign to support more designers of color, culminating in an epic All Harlem Everything Met Gala moment with Dapper Dan, the Harlem legend turned Gucci partner who was once shunned for his custom knockups. Following the pair's Met Gala debut, Daniel sat with them to reflect on the state of fashion or black fashion and how to win at building a brand. One question that Brandice asked both Dapper Dan and Bevy Smith was, Dap, you're a maven who carved out your own lane in this industry. What advice would you give to the emerging designers? And Dapper Dan's response is, arm yourself with the technology to bring your ideas to life. When I first partnered with Gucci, I spent time in Milan and Florence immersing myself in 3D printing, staying on top of what's happening. So how can our up-and-comers use social platforms and e-commerce to build their brands? Bevy's response is, back in the day, brands hired publicists to get their name out there. That's no longer needed. Designers can put their product on Instagram and promote it themselves. And Dapper Dan's response is, what I love most about social media is the chance to generate excitement. I found success because I've always understood that. What else should they do to grow their companies? And Bevy's response is, people think fashion is just about clothes. But this is if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense kind of industry. Yves Saint Laurent and Berga, Marc Jacobs had Robert Duffy. Find a businessman to front your house. Most designers have an understanding of art, but they don't understand the commerce or commerce side. The key to success is mastering both. What do you say to creatives of color who are struggling to find retail support? And Bevy's response is, I don't know that it's advantage for small brands to be in big retailers because of buybacks and such. There's a cost to enter, and sometimes that cost is prohibited for us. We have to look at different ways to move our merchandise. Dapper Dan had a thriving business for more than a decade by selling directly to the consumer with no advertising except word of mouth. So how can Hollywood play a role in supporting our designers? And Bethany's response is, we need to make sure that the purveyors of taste wear our brands. Issa Rae wore all black designers to the CFDA Awards. Tracee Ellis Ross did the same thing at the AMAs. Pop culture fuels what the masses do. We need people on the inside to bring us in. What concerns do you have or do what concerns you most about what's happening now with black designers? And Dapper Dan's response is, we have all these talents and no platform for them. Today's black designers should study the mistakes of the past as they will be doomed to repeat them. In the 90s, there was an explosion of black brands that came out and then crashed. The European companies woke up to that power and usurped it. And Bevy's response is, I love that moment in time when Enice, FUBU, Rockaware, and Sean John were so popular. I do think race plays a role in it. When you look at scaling a business, there are definitely barriers to entry. But it's a new day, and we have a lot more access. One of the best things that happened to me with the European fashion brands having their racist mishaps is that it got me thinking about a way we look at prestige in our own communities. For so long, we've gotten validation by wearing European labels. But why not give that attention to a small black designer who can create something custom instead? And Dapper Dan's response is, we must establish our own relationship with these global brands and kick in the doors so that we can make a difference. Once we get in, we can see how things work on a global scale. We built this fashion thing, so let us in. Let us see how this thing works. The new guard. So these talents are making the mark. Aurora, and hopefully I'm saying her name correctly, Aurora James. Her accessories line, Brother Bellies, supports artisans throughout Africa. And then we have Virgil Abloh. He is Louis Vuitton's menswear artistic director, is also the founder of the cult brand Off-White, C.O. Virgil Abloh. And then we have Fee Noel. She's one of the three black women designers to partner on Nike's HFR LeBron 16. And then finally, we have Kirby John Raymond. The Pyre Moss founder uses his designs to generate social commentary. Style, it girl. Seven Streeter, the singer-songwriter, talks fashion faux pas and the designer bag she can't live without. So Essen's question to her is, how would you describe your personal style? And Seven's response is, I'm a child of the 1990s. I love classic looks. Some of my fashion icons are Janet Jackson, Aaliyah, and Naomi Campbell. They personify what it means to be simple, sultry, dominant, and demure all at the same time. So talk about your favorite designers. D squared 2 shoes are amazing. I like a bit of everything. As long as the clothes fit the mood, I'm in. I'm into it. I also trust my stylist, Dio. We spent a lot of time discussing how I feel and what he envisions that we marry the two. So your new EP, Drunken Words, Sober Thoughts, drops this summer. How does your current style speak to where you are musically? Music and fashion are soulmates. If a song is slow and sensual, I may feel like wearing satin and silk. If I wake up one morning and I want to live in my sweats, my music for the day will most likely have crazy drum cadences or cadences with a lot of energy. So what items are in your closet are in heavy rotation right now? I have this huge jean jacket that's been my favorite for years. I wear it with dresses, sweats, and shirts. And then the final question is, you've worn many different looks in your career and definitely have fashion and fun. Which is your all-time favorite? My favorite look at the moment is my dominatrix, one from the Trumpet Awards where I performed The Boy Is Mine. My least favorite was from 2018 Awards where I wore a dress my stylist told me not to wear. I didn't listen, and child, that was a lesson learned. So it looks like that we have actually run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This program or this broadcast is readily available as a broadcast and a podcast after or at our website, www.triangleradioreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.